Okay, good morning, everybody. We're holding in Perek Ches of the Netzach Yisrael. And now we are out of the Gemara in Gittin, which we have been occupied with for a while, for several sections, and we're still talking about the Churban. The piece today that he's going on is the Gemara in Maseches Tainis, actually the Mishnah in Maseches Tainis, which says that there were five things which happened to Aviseinu on Shivasar B'Tammuz, and five things on Tisha B'Av. And what were the five things that happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz? Shivasar B'Tammuz Nishtabru Haluchos. The Luchos were broken by Moshe Rabbeinu after the Maaseh HaEgel, after the golden calf. Nishtabru Haluchos, Ubitel Batal HaTamid. The Korban Tamid was stopped during the time, stages of the siege of Yerushalayim. They were gozer and they stopped, that they were not able to bring the Korban HaTamid anymore. Hufka Ha'ir, the city walls were broken through. The siege of Yerushalayim was broken. The Saraf Apostamos, Es HaTorah, Apostamos, burned the Torah at a later time. The Hemit Tzelem Behechol, and Menashe, Amelech, put a Tzelem, put an idol up in the Hechol. The Tisha B'Av, Nigzer al Aviseinu shelo yikantzu l'oretz, and Tisha B'Av was decreed on our forefathers they shouldn't enter Eretz Yisrael. V'charav Abayis b'Rishayinu v'Shniya, and the first and second Batei Mikdashos were destroyed. V'nilkada Beitar was captured. V'nechresha ha'ir, and the city Yerushalayim was plowed up. And those were the five things which happened on Tisha B'Av. Five things on Shivasar B'Tammuz, terrible tragedies, and five terrible things that happened on Tisha B'Av. So the Maharal is going to be discussing this Gemara and this Mishnah and things which go into it a little bit from the Gemara. But we'll start with the first. There are a few things that he's going to be discussing here in this parak. We'll focus on two broader topics, and we'll see if we'll have a chance. We'll touch upon a third. But the main thing is we're going to focus on two broader topics. The first topic, which the Maharal speaks about over here, is a very interesting one, a very interesting perspective. Lakol zman v'eis l'chol chayfetz tachas hashamayim. Shlomo HaMelech says in Koheles, for everything there is a time and a season, for everything which happens under the sun. So there's a time to be happy, there's a time to be sad, there's a time. He describes the opposites, right? There's a time for this, there's a time for this. There's a time to love, there's a time to hate. There's a time to give birth, there's a time to pass away from the world, come into the world, to leave the world, and so on and so forth. There are itim. There are times, there are seasons for things, and there are seasons for one thing and for its opposite. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Ein lecha adam she'ein leisha. There's no person who doesn't have his time, who doesn't have his time. And therefore, there are also times which are ideal times for us, for Klal Yisrael. And there are times which are less ideal for us, for Klal Yisrael. So, if we have ourselves, and we have our antagonists, we have those who are opposed to us, who would bring us down, how do we balance? How do we understand? What's the time for us? What's not the time for us? So, Maharal says here, he cites a principle which he says in numerous other places as well, and is found as well in other Svarim. You know, in the calendar, in the solar calendar, we have four markers in the year, right? We have the, I'm not good at this, okay, guys, see how? The solstices and the equinoxes, right?
Yes.
Okay? The solstices are in June
December.
And in December. In June, you have the calendar at an extreme where the sun is out for the most time, And the sun is down, the moon is out for the least time. In December, it's the opposite. The sun is up for the least time, and the moon is up for the most time. Those are the seasons which are out of kilter, so to speak, where it's on the extreme, where the days are as imbalanced as they could possibly be. And on the other hand, you have the equinoxes. Right, the only way I could remember which one it is, right? The equinoxes, right, which are where the days are going to be even, where you have, at those times, you're going to have the same amount, right, in September and in March, right, where the days and the nights are going to be even. They're going to be even between the two of them. So the calendar has it. Our calendar has it, right? So now we're in Adar Aleph, right? The first Adar. Well, we're in a leap year, in a Jewish leap year. Why are we in a Jewish leap year? What does that mean, a leap year? So we have it that the Bnei Yisrael, generally, we count month by month Lalavana according to the moon, according to the lunar calendar. However, unlike our cousins, the Muslims, who count purely by the lunar calendar, and they will, you know, they have a sliding calendar, so Ramadan will always be a shifting target. It can be any time during the year, because every year they lose 11 days and the calendar just shifts and shifts and shifts. We correct our calendar so that it somehow still will match on some level with the solar calendar. How does it do that if you lose 11 days each year? So the way the calendar is established now, the way we have it as a fixed calendar, they used to do it spontaneously looking at the situation, but the way we have it is that 7 out of every 19 years we add a month, and that makes it to have the compensation. So that, for instance, this year, if we would not have added a second Adar, so Pesach would have turned out in the middle of March. Right? The only people who would be happy about that would be 7 Mile Market. Right? So Pesach would have come out in the middle of March. And what's the problem with that? The problem with that is that the Torah says you're supposed to be Shamar es Chodesh Ha'aviv. You're supposed to safeguard the springtime month. Pesach is described as taking place in the month of the Aviv. It's called the Chag Aviv, the springtime festival. Likewise, Sukkot is described as Tkufas Hashana, is described as the year shifts. It's described as the fall festival, when you're switching seasons there as well. So these Yamim Tovim have to be fitting according to the calendar. And we know they're defined as agricultural festivals. This is when the stuff is beginning to blossom. This is when it's ready to harvest Shavuos. And Sukkot is the ingathering. So that doesn't go according to the moon. That goes according to the solar calendar, according to the seasons that were defined by the sun. So we have to reconcile it so that it'll be in the range of it. And the Gemara speaks about it with more particulars, making sure that there's going to be some part of Pesach that's going to end up within the Tkufa, within the season. But that means, essentially, that Sukkot and Pesach, these Yamim Tovim of the redemption and the strength of Klal Yisrael, come out during these equal periods, during the equinoxes, during the times of Shivayon. And on the other hand, you have Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, which are in the heat of the summer, in the intense time. It's not exactly at the time of the solstice, of course. Right? It doesn't work out to be exactly at the time of the solstice, but it's still at this time of a great intensification of the heat of the summer. For whatever reason, the heat of the summer is not going to be when the days are the longest. It seems to build up. I don't know how these things work exactly, but it gets hotter afterwards. It gets hotter afterwards as the summer builds up. And that's the time of these terrible yeridos, these terrible difficulties for the Jewish people. Says the Maharal, in the scheme of lachol zman va'es, everything has its time, everything has its season. The season for the Jewish people is the season of balance. And the season for our enemies, the season for our downfall, are the seasons of extremes, the seasons of imbalance. It's a very interesting feature of the calendar, and we're going to add to it a little bit here as we go along. You know, there are two other fasts that we have in our calendar besides for Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. You will say there are four other fasts. Okay, we're not talking about Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is not a fast over any kind of a tragedy at all. We're also not going to talk about Tanis Esther for two reasons, because it's also not a fast over a tragedy. There was no tragedy that happened. It was a fast that we mimic the days of prayer that came before the salvation of Purim. So it's not a day of mourning like Shivasar B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, Asara B'Tevis, and Tzom Gedalia are, which all of them are commemorating specific tragic, negative events. So the other two, besides Shavuot B'Tammuz and the Tisha B'Av, are Asara B'Tevis, which was the day that they laid siege to Yerushalayim, amongst other things. When does that come? That comes also at a solstice. Tkufas Teves. That comes in the dead of winter, right after Hanukkah. Right? When the days are at their shortest. And there's a real connection there in the seasons as well. When the days are at their shortest. So there you have another tragedy also occurring in this time when it's out of whack. The only one which is an exception to this rule is Tzaim Gedalia. Tzaim Gedalia, which was over the assassination of a tzaddik, Gedalia ben Achikam, which happened actually on Rosh Hashanah, or we commemorate it on the third day of Tishrei, right, the day after Rosh Hashanah. So Tzaim Gedalia happened in that same, in the equinox, in those good seasons. So we'll see in Yirat Hashem in a little bit why that is the case. Maral addresses that as well. But he says, you see basically that the problems which will develop for Klal Yisrael is going to be in those off seasons. What's the pshat? What's the idea? How are we supposed to understand that? So he says the way he explains it is that something, and this is a way of thinking which he has general in his numerological analyses as well, is that something which is on an extreme means it can approach an end. Something which is even, it's sort of like it has no end. It's perfectly balanced. Sort of like right in the middle. And when you talk about something which is churban, which is destruction, you're talking about something being on the end, going over the brink. And so, the times of churban are these times of these extremes where you get to the end, where you get, so to speak, to the end of the line. That's, to some degree, what he suggests. And, we can sort of supplement it and understand. I think I learned with you once, it probably was in the Be'er HaGaila, where the Gemara speaks about the idea of where these terrible tidal waves or quakes that come to the world, and the Gemara says it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is distressed over the tzaras, over the difficulties which are experienced by the Jewish people. Right? Tears of Hashem drop into the sea and cause this tremendous tidal wave. So whatever, right, we explained, it's not, these things, the Gemaras, are not exactly to be taken literally. But the idea is that when Klal Yisrael is suffering, that's not the stage of balance of the world. Stage of balance, the way, so to speak, it ought to be, when things are in place, is where v'sim lechato Hashem levadecha, Hashem will rule over the world, and v'chein tein kaved Hashem le'amecha, the Jewish people are given their honored and respected position. They're held up where they belong, where they are supposed to be. That's the position which the world is, the way it's supposed to be, where things are supposed to be settled, is with Klal Yisrael in place. A time of Churban is not just the rise and fall of nations. Now the Romans have it, and Klal Yisrael is suffering. That is a world which is upside down. That's a world which is upside down. That's the way Mepharshim explained the Gemara. Rav Kook has a beautiful essay on that Gemara, which I just mentioned to you about the thing. That the idea is that the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu married Demais is because when Klal Yisrael is Bishvala Madrega, when Klal Yisrael is on their low level, when Klal Yisrael is suffering persecution and dispersion and everything else, then the world is upside down. We're saying the world is upside down. So you'll see manifestations of the world being turned upside down. You'll see that, because it's just so crazy that this should be the matzav. It's not the way the world is supposed to be. And so, the seasons of the greatest evenness are the seasons where Klal Yisrael indeed achieves their redemption. Now, there's a famous, beautiful chazal where it says, Hashem Ha'ishiv Yichidim Eisam Maiti Asirim Bakosharos. Hashem removed the Asirim, the prisoners, Bakosharos. So what does it mean, Bakosharos? Could mean from the term kasher, which is good, the best possible way. And Chazal say, indeed, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim in the season when it was just right, when it wasn't too hot, and it wasn't too cold, it wasn't too dry, it wasn't too rainy. Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim in the springtime. And normally we understand that, and certainly true on a certain level. What the Gemara is saying is that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu even worried about the details. You know, might say, normally you say, you know, I'm doing you such a favor. You're complaining about the fact that the weather isn't good. Right? You know, the Jews, you know, the Ethiopians getting airlifted out of Egypt, and they're complaining, out of Ethiopia, and they're complaining about the weather. You know, come on, guys, get over it. You're experiencing a great salvation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he does it, is going to be so careful and so sensitive to make it a geula shlema that he made it that it was at the best time with the nicest weather, just perfect. But it's more than that. It's more than that, as we see from this inside of the Maral, that Maitzi Asirim Bakasharis, it wasn't just that Hashem was making sure that the Jewish people would have nothing to complain about. But it was that season, those seasons of balance, those seasons of the avoidance of the extremes of daylight and darkness and temperatures and everything else, that are the times of, you know, it's just right. You know, people view San Diego as being heaven, right? It's always, the whole year, it's like 70 degrees, right? It doesn't rain much, you know, it's like, oh, perfect, you know, boring. You know, but, you know, there's no cycles, right? There's like a bakashar, it's like it's just perfect, perfect balance. And in a sense, Klal Yisrael, when Klal Yisrael is at their best, that's the period of balance for the world. So that's one overall insight, so to speak, which the Maral explains into this idea of the tightness of Shiva Ser B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, where all these terrible things happen there. And he says that in contrast to Asara B'Teves, which was really much more of just the, you know, the beginning of the problem, that happened when it was the extreme of kor, of cold in the winter. Whereas, you know, we view in many ways where things, so to speak, heat up, you know, is that's where the real problems unfold and develop. Yeah.
Why are both extremes bad for the Jews? Wouldn't one extreme seem to be good for the Jews and the other extreme be bad?
Balance is good for the Jews. Balance is good for the Jews.
Okay, but for the Goyim, they still experience the balance times as well, right? Which would...
What do you mean they still experience the balance times?
I mean, they're on the other side, right?
Right.
So that would be their optimal time too, wouldn't it? Or both
the time of balance? No. Now, is there... When the world is balanced, so to speak, and that means that Klal Yisrael is... things are where they're supposed to be. Klal Yisrael's in their position, so that's not good for those who stand in opposition to the Jews. When it's good for those who stand in opposition to the Jews, it's because things aren't quite right. Things are tilted. That's the Jew-centered view of the world, which is manifested by this feature of the calendar. Now, the Tzorais of Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av are 10. 5 on Shivasar B'Tammuz and 5 on Tisha B'Av. And that is also something which the Maral considers as being very, very significant. You know, when we speak about the great things which happened to the Jewish people and to the world, we speak in tens. There were 10 statements that brought the world into existence. There were 10 makos, 10 plagues in Mitzrayim that signaled the redemption. Right, there were 10 commandments which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us at Har Sinai to forge the relationship, the giving of the Torah, and everything else that went along with it. And here, which is the opposite of that, the antithesis of that, the destruction of everything good, the undoing of the redemption, it also comes with, so to speak, with 10 plagues, in a certain sense, being visited upon the Jews. And they're not happening all at once. That's the interesting thing. Here we're viewing it from a long-range view, and we look back in history and we say there are 5 things in Shavuos or B'Tammuz and 5 things on Tisha B'Av. I mean, some of them were in the first Beis HaMikdash, some in the second Beis HaMikdash. It's not happening all at once. But nevertheless, the way the Mishnah comes to present it is 5 and 5. You know, like almost like two sets of tablets. 5 and 5. 5 happened on Shavuos or B'Tammuz, 5 happened on Tisha B'Av. And says the Maral, if you look at it, the ones that happened at Shivas or B'Tammuz were starters, and the ones that happened on Tisha B'Av were closers. What do we mean? So first of all, obviously, in the calendar, when we mark the period of the Bein HaMetzarim of the 3 weeks, Right? It starts with Shavuos Arba Tammuz, it concludes with Tisha B'Av. Well, Shavuos Arba Tammuz happens to be an anniversary of some tragedies, and 3 weeks later we end with Tisha B'Av, which happens to be also. But it's a period which is framed by Shavuos Arba Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. If you look at it, really, we have both of these dates. Both of these dates have beginnings in biblical Chumash history. Right, beyond, before we get to the times of the Batei Mikdashes. And Shavuos Arba Tammuz was the day of Nishtabru Haluchas. Shavuos Arba Tammuz was the day of the sealing of the golden calf, of the Chet HaEgel. The Chet HaEgel is really what we would call the first major failure of the Jewish people. They did different things before the Chet HaEgel, before the giving of the Torah. Right, they challenged Hashem as they left Mitzrayim about food, about water. But once they got to Tyra, and we expected, wow, now it's honeymoon time, it was a very brief honeymoon. 40 days later, they constructed and worshipped the Egel, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to smash the Luchos. And that was the beginning of the problems for the Jewish people. Hashem was ready, according to what he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, to say, forget about it, let's call it quits. And Moshe Rabbeinu prevailed, Hashem had compassion, and they didn't call it quits. And Klal Yisrael continued with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Mitzrayim. To go on to Eretz Yisrael. However, then came a very similar reaction to the Chet HaMeraglim, to the sin of the spies. And the sin of the spies is the first item on the list for Tisha B'Av. B'Tisha B'Av Nigzar Al Aviseinu Shalei Yikantzu L'Aretz. It was decreed on our forefathers that they should not enter Eretz Yisrael. The sin of the Meraglim, of the spies, the next big sin of the Jewish people of Midbar, although again there were many others along the way, when Hashem punished the Jews for the Meraglim, he said, you challenged me 10 times, okay, there's that number 10 again, and therefore I'm not going to let you go into Eretz Yisrael. However, the signal chet, which closed the deal, was the sin of the Meraglim. And if you study the Chumash closely, you see so many shared properties between how the story goes around the Chet HaEgel, and how the story goes around the Chet HaMeraglim. The response of Hashem is similar. The prayers of Moshe Rabbeinu are similar. In both cases, the 13 attributes of mercy in one form or another are invoked. Moshe Rabbeinu uses the same arguments, right? With some slight differences which are noted by the Rishonim. The same prayers. Except what happened was that whereas by the Chet HaEgel, the Jewish people basically got a reprieve, and Hashem said, look, you know, this chet isn't going away, but I'm not going to change things fundamentally. By the Chet HaMeraglim, our fate was sealed. And Hashem said, but I'm not going to take this generation into Eretz Yisrael. And we ended up, as a result of that, being stuck in the Midbar, being stuck in the desert for 40 years. So, Shavuos Arba Tammuz starts a process, and Chet HaMeraglim, Tisha B'Av, ends the process. So it's not just two convenient anniversaries, and if we have two such things, you know, 3 weeks apart, we might as well call it the 3 weeks in between. It's indeed a process that started at Shavuos Arba Tammuz and that concluded at Tisha B'Av. Already first in the Midbar. And says the Maharal, if you look at the 5 and 5, you see that some of them are more beginning stages. The ones which are associated with Shavuos Arba Tammuz are beginning stages. And the ones which are associated with Tisha B'Av are end stages. Shavuos Arba Tammuz, he says, so what happened? So Nishtabu Aluchais, the Luchais were broken. Okay, that's pretty final, it seems like, but it's not so final because so Moshe Rabbeinu went up and he got another set of Luchais. Batal HaTamid, right? The Tamid was stopped. You stop it today, but you can resume it at some other time. Hufka Ha'ir, the city walls were broken through. That's a significant beginning, but it's only leading to the ultimate destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which is going to happen on Tisha B'Av. When Apostolos, you know, burnt the Torah, it can be replaced. When Menashe put a tzelem in a hechel, it can be removed. But when you look at Tisha B'Av, Klal Yisrael was now, there was a gzeira, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. This generation would never see Eretz Yisrael. The destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. The destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The capture of Beitar, right, and the plowing up of the city of Yerushalayim, there's a greater finality to these. There's a much greater, much more significant finality to these. It's an interesting thing. Rabbi Hartman has an interesting note on it, very hard to understand exactly. says, well, the Luchos wasn't so final because you could have another one. So why is the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash so final? You can have another one of those too, right? So it's a little hard to understand in the Maharal. So he has a note where he says over from Chacham Echad, and a very an interesting interpretation to explain this. You know, he says that by the Luchais Rishainais, they were sort of returned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are expressions in Chazal that they went back to Hashem. That the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. There was a Churban up and there was a Churban down. And we're not going to get into the intricacies of that. But what I do want to just get into is that go back to the note which I mentioned to you before. Which is, there's one of these fast days. One of these fast days that's just not like the others. And that is Tzayim Gedalia, which is right there during that beautiful season of Yamim Tovim. It's right after Rosh Hashanah. It's in the month of the equinox. Right? What's going on there with Tzayim Gedalia? It's also a destruction, and it's coming at a time of balance. So listen to what the Maharal says. This is actually, this is at the end of the Perek, the end of this chapter, but really I think it fits into some degree to the calendar discussion of before. You know, Chazal tell us that the death of the righteous is as severe as the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That's why we put together Tzayim Gedalia, right, with these other fasts. Even though Tzayim Gedalia is not, so to speak, the national calamity of the destruction of the building, it's the loss of this great Tzaddik Gedalia ben Achikam. So the Tzaddik is, you know, it's a Kedusha which is taken from the world. But says the Maharal, there's a difference between the death of the righteous and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And that is, when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, it's destroyed. When the tzaddik dies, he's taken from this world. We don't have him down here. The tzaddik isn't vaporized, doesn't disappear. The Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the Beis HaMikdash disappears. So it's not just that we don't have the Kedusha Ba'aretz. The Kedusha of the Mikdash doesn't exist. Whereas the tzaddik, right? What do we say in Hallel? In a certain sense, Yokar be'enei Hashem, Hamavsa lachasidav, precious in the eyes of Hashem is death to the righteous, right? So some say, well, that's very difficult, very hard. Some say, in a certain sense, Hakadosh Baruch Hu's bringing the person back. You know, the Gemara says when we mourn over the death of somebody, so that the term which they would say is, we've been left bereft. You know, he, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or she, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has taken him or her to wherever, you know, to a better place, you know, we often say. But we suffer because we used to have this person with us, we don't have him anymore. The destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is a churban above and below. It's a churban above and below. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we speak about an idea of Shechinta Begalusa, that Hashem's own divine presence goes into Golus with it as well. When the tzaddik is taken, the tzaddik is taken up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there says the Maharal, when does that happen? When do we have the fast day that marks that? During the time of Rosh Hashanah, of Yom Kippur, during the time of Shivayin. Number one, both because, given that that's the case, it's not the same level of destructiveness. And says the Maharal, that's the time of tshuva. That's the time of a person returning to Hashem. Returning to Hashem. You know, we say there are two things that stimulate tshuva. One is maskir lo yom hamisa, remind the person of the day of death. Right? You're going back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? You want to make sure that you're in good shape when you go and you meet him. You don't want to have things to be ashamed of, you know, to have a need to hide. And the other one is, you know, the season of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we try to bring ourselves back closer to Hashem. Yeah, it's a season of judgment that stimulates it. But the idea is, Dir Shu Hashem, V'hi Matzai, Hashem is accessible. We don't have to die to go to Hashem during the season. Hashem comes down here. We're able to come close to Him. Says the Maharal, so it's not out of sync that the idea of the tzaddik being returned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that form of tragedy, quote unquote, the way we experience it as tragedy, but in his world, it's not a world of destruction, it's him being brought back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is the season of a person being brought back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a it's a novel twist to, you know, to see it this way. Again, we experience it as a fast day. Just want to read to you a few of his words about it, so you'll hear the way he says it, and maybe you'll believe me. So he says like this. He says, this is page ratio test in the Hartman edition, the top of the second column. Hatzadik lahigi aloi bitul. The tzadik wasn't negated. Raki nilkecha neshama mimenu v'shavel Hashem yisparach. The soul was taken from him and returned to Hashem. V'dover zeh roi shi'ia b'aseres yimei tshuva. And this is worthy to happen during the aseres yimei tshuva. Shakol shavel Hashem yisparach. Because that's when everything is, so to speak, returned to Hashem. Ki aneshama chayzeres al Hashem yisparach dafka b'aseres yimei tshuva, k'ma yisho amarnu. V'hi miskashetz miskadeshes mipchisus haguf achumri. Right, what happens during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva? We culminate with Yom Kippur. What's that? What happens on Yom Kippur? On Yom Kippur, we to some degree disengage from our physical bodies. We become like malachim, like angels, so we can be more attached to Hashem. Right? Isn't that the transcendent, positive quality of the death, where the person becomes more disengaged from the physical to be able to become more attached to Hashem? Ki Aseres Yimei Tshuva Emuchadim Shiyiskar Yishonim Impchisus Haguf Liyais Kodosh. V'dover zeh emes ein sofek, but this is true without a doubt. V'lokach dafko ha-tzadik hazeh, sho'yosilukai menelem hazeh, k'dei l'salek ha-kdusha menelem ha-chomri hazeh. Therefore, dafko, this righteous person, that his separation from the world was, yeah, it was a punishment to us, to those who are left behind, to remove kedusha from this world, but it's the idea of this ability to detach, to bring the kedusha to a higher place. Haseres Meitshuva is the time where somehow we try to distill the Kedusha from being overly engaged where it just doesn't fit. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing when he's pulling away the Tzaddik. He's Kadosh, he wants to preserve it, and he brings him closer to him. It's something which requires it's a very thought provoking Maharal. You know, is he blurring, or is he sort of glossing over the tragic component of it? You know, in Yom Kippur, the whole thing is, everything is raising up. There's no negative, right? But there's an aspect of it. There's an aspect of it which is common to the Misas Tzadikim. And that's the way the Maharal settles that, so to speak, outstanding piece of the calendar that we have with Misa Tzadikim, the fast over Misa Tzadikim during the period between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Just one final word about it. If you have any questions, of course, I'm always happy to take them. You know, it's a little bit jarring. You know, Aseres Yimei Tshuva is a time of tshuva. It's not a time of mourning, right? Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av share a lot of halachas, a lot of common rules. However, they're fundamentally different. Tisha B'Av is an expression of mourning. Yom Kippur is an expression of the person spiritualizing themselves, becoming less engaged with the physical, more spiritual. And you know that there were people who were makbit to fast whenever possible during Aseres Yimei Tshuva, to fast perhaps 10 days during Slichas. There's a whole thing to fast a full 10 days during Slichas, so they would start before Rosh Hashanah to make up for the days that you can't fast during Aseres Yimei Tshuva, because you can't fast according to Lamais, it's a question, but you can't fast on Rosh Hashanah, you can't fast on Shabbos Shuva. You know, so there's a real avoda of fasting as part of the Tshuva process during this time. And punct, specifically, there's a fast day which you don't have to be at tzaddik. Everybody who's going to be observant and able to is going to fast during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva besides Yom Kippur. And what's that? That's Tzayim Gedalia. Why? We got to suddenly shift gears, you know? Tzayim Gedalia is because during the time after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Babylonians appointed a governor over the Jewish people, Gedalia ben Achikam, and some people didn't like it. They thought he was a puppet, so they assassinated him, but he was a big tzaddik. So we mourn over this. I mean, it's like, you know, here we are, you know, these poor rabbis who have to speak on Tzayim Gedalia. You know, they're busy giving all these nice tshuva drushas, and then suddenly you throw them back into the middle of the summer. Right? They start talking about the Churban and about Gedalia ben Achikam. It's like it's jarring, it's different. Maral is harmonizing them. And he's saying, you know something? It's the tragedy of Misas Tzadikim. Yeah, there are these elements of Churban and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking things away from the Jewish people. But it's the Misas Tzadikim. Misas Tzadikim, we always view with a certain ambiguity. Right? Yeah. It's a big loss for us. But on the other hand, you think about that Tzadik. And you think about where he's going. And you think about the fact that now, to some degree, he's freed from all the kinds of difficulties, and he's ascending to such a high and special place. Now that fits right with the season. It's a perfect fit with the season. Again, if you don't look at the part of the people left behind, it's an exact fit for the season. It's a fast which speaks about person doing tshuva, shuva el Hashem, return to Hashem. When we say return to your Maker, we get all nervous, right? But there's this positive connotation of tshuva, which is a positive notion of engaging more closely with Hashem. And so he's unifying the themes. So therefore, that's why this fast doesn't belong in the seasons of the extreme, in the heat of Shivas HaBetamuz and Tisha B'Av, which shows things out of kilter. It's part of this more harmonious season, the seasons of our Geula, the seasons of our redemption.
What about Mrs. Tzadikim HaKadosh, which is the flip side of the Shiva process? We're looking for Kapara. It's not a good way to get it, but we can get it.
Could be good. So I think it's another point of positive connection. I think it's written. It rings a bell, but people speak about it. That's it as well. Misa Sadikim atones. So it's appropriate for this.
There's another difference between this fast day and the other one, in that, I mean, Jews murdered another Jew. The other fast days, the Romans or the Babylonians did this, the Romans did this, and someone else did this. So this is Jew upon Jew.
Excellent.
Murder.
An excellent point. An excellent point. If it was self-inflicted, so using the Maharal's thesis that he says, L'kol zman v'eis, each thing has its season, and when Kol Yisrael's over the Goyim, it's in the seasons of the equinoxes, of the even times, of good balance. When the Goyim are over the Jewish people, it's in the seasons of the solstices of the imbalance. So you say, okay, that's true of Asara B'Tevis, is the Goyim over the Jews. It's true of Shavuos B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, it's the Goyim over the Jews. But Tzem Gedalia wasn't the Goyim over the Jews, it was the Jews over the Jews. That's very interesting. I like it. I think it has a lot of merit. Okay, so now let's go to the second thing, the second point that the Maharal says here in this, and this is a big yesod. This is a powerful, powerful concept. I believe it's a powerful concept that the Maharal teaches. He teaches it here somewhat briefly. He discusses it at a greater length, gives it more coverage in the Sefer Gevurais Hashem, which is the Sefer that the Maharal wrote about, Yitzias Mitzrayim. And the idea the Maharal says is as follows. The Gemara says, Atem bechisem bechia shalchinam, v'ani ekvalochem bechia l'dayres. Tisha B'Av is the anniversary of five things. The first one was the sin of the spies, and the second and third were the destructions of the first and second Batei Mikdashos, and then a couple of other major destructions, Beitar, Nechrusha Ha'ir. So the Gemara says that it's not a casual link. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the Bnei Yisrael sat there, and they cried. The Meraglim, the spies, came back from Eretz Yisrael with their report. Oh, it's too much, it's imposing, we're never going to be able to get in there. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so they sat, and it says, Vayifka Amba Lailahu, and the people cried on that night. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you cried needlessly. You cried for nothing. So as such, Ani Ekbalachem Bechil Adairis, I'm going to give you something to cry for. On this night, you'll have what to cry for. There will be future subsequent destructions that the Jewish people will suffer, will sustain, will be very connected to Tisha B'Av. It's a strange thing. You're crying for nothing. I'm going to give you something to cry about. You know, it sounds like the schoolyard bully or something like that. You know, like what kind of an idea is there? So Maharal says a davar gadol, a very, very big thing. Very, very big thing, a huge thing. Huge thing. With that setup, it better be good, right? Okay. Let's shift forums here. to a night which happens, quote unquote, to always come out on the same night as Tisha B'Av. What's that? That's the night of the Seder, right? You know, the night of the Seder is always the same night of the week as Tisha B'Av. This year, what day of the year is going to the week is going to be Tisha B'Av? It's going to be Sunday. Pesach is going to be the first Seder is Matzei Shabbos. Erev Pesach Shacholias B'Shabbos, my favorite, really, right? And so it's also going to be Erev Tisha B'Av comes out of Shabbos. It also happens to be a favorite for me because that's the only time I eat Shalosh Shulis at home. I never eat Shalosh Shulis at home except when it's Erev Tisha B'Av and Erev Pesach. So it's Shabbos. So it's connected. Those two, it's a feature of the Jewish calendar. At Bash, Gardak, you know, it's the way the first letter, there's a whole system which is a hint to this, but Aleph, the first day of Pesach, corresponds to Tav, corresponds to the night of Tisha B'Av. That's one of the reasons why we eat an egg, right, and the Pesach Seder, right, at the beginning of the meal, after the matzah, the egg is this, like we eat on Erev Tisha B'Av, the food of mourning. Remember, that's going to be Tisha B'Av. What's the relationship between those two things? So this is part of what we're going to be discussing here tonight. So we shift to the Seder. At the Seder, we have four cups of wine. Why? Because when Hashem spoke about Gulas Mitzrayim, so there were four Lashonos, four terms of Gula. V'hotzeisi, I will take you out from beneath the bondage of Mitzrayim. V'itzalti, and I will save you from working for them. V'goalti, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm. Right? V'lokachti, and I will take you for me for a nation. So everybody knows. What's the question? There's a fifth. Right? Plead the fifth. I will bring you to the land. Why don't we have a fifth kais for the fifth thing? I'm going to bring you to the land of Eretz Yisrael. Hashem continued the pasuk with that. So, like, why four lashonos of geula? Why not five lashonos of geula? So we can talk, we can say, well, you know, coming to Eretz Yisrael, that's for a different yantif. You know, Shavuos is coming down the pike. 7 weeks from tomorrow night, from Pesach, you know, and we say then that's the yontif of Bikurim, the yontif of the first fruits. Maybe that's the yontif to celebrate coming to Eretz Yisrael. No, but you know, Pesach. Let's just focus on what's happening here on Pesach. That can all be said to be happening on Pesach. Not so simple, because v'lokachti eschem li la'am. If you think about it, and this is when was that? That was Shavuos. That was Matan Torah. Mm-hmm. What did Hashem say to the Jewish people? He said, "I took you out at Har Sinai, right? And the days Rosh Chodesh Sivan." He said, "You know, you saw what I did for you in Mitzrayim. I lifted you up on the wings of eagles. I brought you to me. And now, if you're going to accept my covenant, you'll be my people." So that means maybe Lokachti Eschem Lilam is only at Har Sinai. So maybe we should have three cups, right? Maybe cut that one out. V'go'alti, many argue is that Shvi Shel Pesach. Maybe we should have two tonight, one on Shvi Shel Pesach, on the seventh day of Pesach, and one on, right? We end up with this four. We just celebrate Yitzias Mitzrayim. We don't celebrate Bias HaAretz. Now, once upon a time, when Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, what did He say to them? First words of proposal. Moshe, go to the Jewish people and tell them, I'm taking them out of Mitzrayim and I'm bringing them into a land flowing with milk and honey, into Eretz Yisrael. That was the original proposal. And you know what happened? Irony of ironies is that He took one group of people out of Mitzrayim and He never brought them into Eretz Yisrael. The people He brought into Eretz Yisrael was a whole different group of people, with the exception of two, right? Or at least two of record, Kolev and Yahushua. Right, those were the only ones who went into Eretz Yisrael, who came out of Mitzrayim. Otherwise, Hashem took these people out of Mitzrayim and didn't bring them into Eretz Yisrael. A disconnect was formed. This is the Maharal's thesis. I'm going to tell you the elements of it, but this is the basic thesis of the Maharal, and it's a very powerful thesis. That originally, it was supposed to be one fell swoop. We know that. Originally, they were supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael. But originally, it was to be an indivisible package. Five Lashonos of Geula. Because Yetzias Mitzrayim rolls right into Matan Torah. But this generation that stopped after stage four, after Matan Torah, and rode off coming into Eretz Yisrael, and was not able to go into Eretz Yisrael, they broke it up. So we're left with Yetzias Mitzrayim without its promise. Without its promise of Eves Yeschem El Oretz. Without its promise of Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash. Without that last piece, which was meant to be part of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. But we broke it up. We took Mitzrayim. We took Kriyas Yamsuf. We took Matan Torah. We said yes. But when it came to Eretz Yisrael, what did we say? No. So we severed it from the package. Says the Maharal, it is known, Chazal tell us in many different places, that had the Jewish people not spurned Eretz Yisrael, we would have gone straight in. We never would have left. What happened was you made it separable. The Maharal goes on with a greater depth. And Maharal says, Yetzias Mitzrayim is forever. If you recall, we learned this about this in the introduction to the Netzach Yisrael. That was the Hakdama of the Netzach Yisrael. Was that everything starts with and is embedded in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim is forever. We today are maskir Yetzias Mitzrayim day and night. The Gemara has a discussion. It may even be remembered liyumais HaMashiach. Yetzias Mitzrayim forged something, created something for the Jewish people that's interminable. Vayotze es amo Yisrael mitocham l'cheirus olam. Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim for eternal freedom. A Jew can never be enslaved. An individual will go out at Yovel, right? Olam, which is called Olam, right? Because you are my servants that I took out of Mitzrayim. Nobody can really, they can superimpose a little bit of a layer on that, but they can't supplant it, they can't replace it. No nation could have a permanent shibud on the Jewish people because Hashem made us His nation at Mitzrayim. When Hashem declares the first commandment, I am Hashem your God, I took you out of Mitzrayim, this is it, this is for keeps. And if Eretz Yisrael would have been part of the package, if we would have gone right into Eretz Yisrael, we wouldn't have spurned it, we would have seen it as part of the package, it would have also been eternal, absolute, unchangeable. Ad yavar amcho Hashem, ad yavar amzu kanisa. We say that, right? Familiar? The last verses of the Shiras Hayam. What does it say? We say that they say, until your people, as your people, Hashem, cross, as they cross, the people that you took as your own. So we say, ad yavor, ad yavor. Right? There are two different generations of yavor. There are two different generations of passing. And we speak about the Klal Yisrael passing out of Mitzrayim, passing into Eretz Yisrael. There's a drush of Chazal, the days of Yehoshua, versus the days of Ezra. But the idea was supposed to be, as we say in the Shir HaSayam, you're taking them out of Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu said this at Kriyas Hayam. You're taking them to implant them on your mountain in Yerushalayim. And if it would have been with the same miraculous continuum, the hand of Hashem, sharp, strong, clear, visible with the miracles, to enter Eretz Yisrael, it would have been exactly the same. But in the days of Yeshua, the miracles were a lot more muted. We had to fight, right? And if had we gone in with Moshe Rabbeinu, Chazal tell us, we wouldn't have had to take a weapon with us. Right? We fought. So there were miracles. We had the walls of Jericho come tumbling down with the sounding of the shofar, but those were little sparks of light in the capture of Eretz Yisrael. Much of the conquest of Eretz Yisrael took place very much b'derech hateva, right? With battles which were won, oftentimes against what would seem to be insurmountable odds. But it was a whole different ball of wax, and when it's done by Hashem, it's for keeps. So when Klal Yisrael said, we appreciate the Yetzias Mitzrayim, but we'll do without the Eretz Yisrael piece. They broke off that piece from this Geula. This Geula, which would be a Geula for keeps, they defined the contours of the Geula. They defined how far it would go. And they said, 4 out of 5 ain't bad. And they rejected Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, it became possible for us to have less than a perfect grip on Eretz Yisrael. Atem bechitzam bechir shalchinam, ani ekva lachem bechir ledairis. Yes.
I'm just wondering, is it a coast for Eliyahu? Maybe that's the fifth one? Mashiach, when Eliyahu comes, Mashiach will come and bring us back in?
Yeah. I mean, it's written like that. It's written like that. The truth is that there's a Shaila about a fifth kais. Even in the Haggadah, the structure of the Haggadah would seem to allow for a fifth kais, because each kais, you say a bracha over it. You know, you say Kiddush over the first kais, you say the bracha on the Haggadah Asher Golonu over the second kais, you say benching over the third kais, and you say the bracha of Halal over the fourth kais. But as you notice in the Haggadah, and this is usually where if people around the table are using different Haggadahs, where everybody gets mixed up, is that the bracha at the end of Halal, there's the bracha of Yahalelucha, and then we go and we say Halal Haggadol, those 26 lines, Kilolam Chazo, and Nishmas, and then there's the bracha of Yishtabach. How do you end? You end with the bracha of Yishtabach, the end of the bracha of Yahalelucha, you go back to say Yahalelucha. There are many different nuschais, and really it's sort of begging that you have one bracha for Yahalelucha for Halal, and then one bracha for Yishtabach. And that's the way many Rishonim hold. And they have a fifth. They don't talk about it, the Rishonim, in terms of a Hevesi, right? But that's one of the reasons for the Kais Shel Eliyahu. That's why it says, even Kais Chamishi is Rishus, it's possible for a person to drink it if they really need to drink it. Right? But it's very much related. In Svarim, it's written, it's very much, yes, related to this. And we make it the Kais of Eliyahu, because Eliyahu is going to bring us to complete the picture. We still have Yetzias Mitzrayim. We still have Matan Torah. We don't still have the Gula of Eretz Yisrael. And Eliyahu is going to be the Mavasir, the one to bring us home to that. But that's the thing. It's incomplete. Now you understand. You understand so much more deep, so much more beautiful, why it is that the night of Pesach is the night of Tisha B'Av. Why we eat the egg, you understand? Because really, it was supposed to be all packed into the night of Pesach. Yeah, we celebrate Matan Torah on the night of Pesach. Oh, it didn't happen yet. We celebrate Kriyat Yamsav on the night of Pesach. It didn't happen yet. Because it's all packed into here. This is what it is. Yetzias Mitzrayim was to unfold into all these things. And we would celebrate Eretz Yisrael also, except that it was severed. That generation didn't make it. It was broken off. And that's why we don't go there. So there's Tisha B'Av in Yetzias Mitzrayim. We could have one more cup of wine. Instead of having one more cup of wine, we got a hard-boiled egg. It's mamish. It's a davar gadol. It's a big thing. It's a big yisayid which he's teaching. But let me just add. It ain't over yet. The Maharal adds an akuda, a point that makes this idea so much more profound.
How many days is it from Pesach to Tisha B'Av then?
Offhand, I can't tell you.
Is there some even number that's significant? 100 days?
We'll have to open and take out a calendar and look at it. I don't know.
It's 4 months. Less 5 days.
4 months minus 6 days. So it's about 152 days. No, it's about 112 days.
Yeah.
But 112 days. Everybody knows the significance of 112 days. We don't even have to explain.
Yeah.
Okay.
1, 2, make 4.
Hmm?
And 4 has no significance.
says the Maharal. Maharal goes further. Maharal goes just to explain. Says there's a notion that Chazal teach us, which is Chein Hamokam al Yeshvav. Everybody has a place. Right? We started today, we said, Ein lecha adam she'ein le'shah. There's no person without a time. And everything has its place too. Everybody has their place. And people like their place. Right? You speak to somebody who's from New York, you know, and they love New York. You can't understand it for the life of you. They love New York, right? It's their place, right? You speak to somebody from Baltimore, right? Some people, we like Baltimore. Right? Some people can't understand it for the life of them, right? chen hamokem al yeshvav. It's a blessing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. Just like there are people who like to do a certain job, and for another person will be, ah, oh, get me out of here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made people, he created people with something that they can do for a parnasa in their life. Sometimes we choose something because of other people's expectations, and we go through 17 midlife crises because we didn't find the right way, we didn't find the right place. We do it because of external expectations instead of because of, you know, an internal connection. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created people with connections, and he created people with a connection to their place. What's the place of the Jewish people? Eretz Yisrael. Isn't it? So we should love Eretz Yisrael. We should be attached to Eretz Yisrael. We should be attracted to Eretz Yisrael. The Chen HaMeraglim is described as Mi'isa Be'eretz Chemda, that they rejected the land which is the coveted and attractive land, the land which was to be theirs. Vayimasu Be'eretz Chemda. Says the Maharal, when Klal Yisrael said, ah, Eretz Yisrael, and of course they said, you know, oh, well, Hashem be able to take us there, and so on and so forth. But at the core, the Pasuk says, you know, it's not for us. If it's not for us, then that connection, which is supposed to be the lasting connection, is not there. It really is ours. We're really supposed to be attracted to it. And naturally, without confusion and distortion, we would be immensely, immensely attracted to it. But when Klal Yisrael cried over and said, ach, what do we have to be in this place for? So that was nituk, that was separation. And that was what made it that they wouldn't be able to go in. I want to read to you a little bit of what he writes here about this. This is page Reshit Aleph, first column in the Hartman edition, the Oid. All things naturally yearn and are drawn to their natural place. If the land was for Klal Yisrael, their natural environment, and they would have yearned for it, it would have been for keeps. But it was the opposite. They cried for not. They didn't want to come to the land. This seems to indicate that this isn't their place. That's why they didn't stay there. That's the bechiyah shel chinam. What are you crying for? You're crying as if this isn't for you. Crying, oh, why am I stuck with this? What a mistake. But you disconnected from it. You emotionally, naturally, the natural attraction, you killed, you ruined, you spoiled. And that left them with a separation, l'dayris. Ki ha-bechir sh'ayubaychim mayir sh'ayna sh'ayach lam l'gamre, ki chen mokam al yeshveh, v'chol dover mishtakev v'mchem eshu tivulay. V'im bachu v'zeh mayir k'ayna sh'ayna sh'ayna l'gamre l'chem dolu. That's the thing. They killed the attraction.
Do we know why they did that? I mean, is it important to study why they dropped the ball?
What?
That's in a few weeks. We're going to hear all about that.
Okay. All right, I'll wait.
No.
He's just saying that
they go on forever and ever to talk about why people did this.
Okay.
Yeah, we will Me'at Hashem see more about it. But one thing is clear, is that to some degree this helps us understand as well the other, like the enigmatic part of the Meraglim, right? The open context of the Meraglim is, oh my gosh, those guys, they're so huge, they're so imposing. How are we ever going to manage to get in there? So what's the question? What's with you guys? Hashem just split the sea. He brought 10 plagues upon the Egyptians. I mean, it wasn't like you guys got out of there because of your great muscles and your weapons, right? Hashem did it. So Hashem did that. Why can't Hashem do this? Separation. He needed to take us out of Mitzrayim, right? Fine, so he took us out of Mitzrayim. He doesn't need to take us into Eretz Yisrael. Will he use the same things to take us into Eretz Yisrael? And there's other things at play there, don't get me wrong, but that's part of it. Part of it is, he's saying, oh, okay, Hashem brought all these miracles because that's what was necessary to take us out of Mitzrayim. He revealed us because that was necessary to give us the Torah. Eretz Yisrael, no, you could be a Jew outside of Eretz Yisrael too. Right? So Hashem's going to pull out all the stops to take us into Eretz Yisrael. Maybe we have to do that ourselves. And if we have to do it ourselves, it's a little bit imposing. So maybe we'll do without it. But it's not. Right? You know, you speak to the people, right, from Zionist to non-Zionist, but from in Eretz Yisrael, and they have one theme. It's an interesting thing. It used to be in the old days, only the Zionists would say this. Right now, the non-Zionists say it too. They say, Am Yisrael, Im Torat Yisrael, Be'eretz Yisrael. That's the Jewish Trinity. The Jewish people with the Torah of the Jews in the land of the Jews. And it's inseparable. It's inseparable. But Kol Yisrael in the Midbar said, nah, now you can have Am Yisrael, Im Torat Yisrael, in Borough Park. In Cleveland Heights, right? In Lakewood, right? It's fine. You got 2 out of 3 ain't bad, you know.
On Pesach we say Dayan. On Pesach we sing that song, and you know,
we segment everything, and we say also it about without Har Sinai, without Matan Torah, without Shabbos. So what does it mean? It means, you know something, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have just given us one little piece of it, it would be such a wonderful, tremendous gift. Mm-hmm. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I'm not giving you one piece of it. It goes from the beginning to Bano Lanu Es Beis HaBechira, L'chaper HaZgal HaVeinu, all the way to Bnei Beis HaMikdash. All one package. And we segmented the package and we said, Rabbanu Shem, you know, we can have this without that. And we're still paying the price for that. So when Jews today say, you know, Baruch Hashem, but we still have a nice chashuva thing, we have a beautiful community here, and we have schools, and we have everything else, and we're able to sort of conceive of the Jewish people without the piece of Eretz Yisrael, you know, it's all part of this. It's part of the dismantling of the package. Part of the dismantling of the package, and that's, unfortunately, that's our inheritance from the Dor HaMidbar. Huh?
Is the sin the Meraglim, or is the sin that the people believe the Meraglim? Like the real essence of the sin. Because there are only a few people.
Meraglim got everybody to cry.
Right, so it's the fact
everybody that listened. Everybody bought into it. Everybody accepted it. Everybody accepted it.
So when we pack up, go to Israel.
We really should. We really should.
Can we start a jihad?
Can
we start a jihad?
I don't want to start a jihad. Just start a travel agency.
Is the end of supposed to be the blueprint for the Gula Las Lava. So is this plan A, or it seems like we're in plan B?
Don't say that.
No, it looks like the decoupling is, I mean, how it works.
Our thing is to recouple it, you know, to make it back as part of the package.
Does everybody have to
be mishtokik, huh?
Does everybody have to do that, or can a few of them?
It's never going to be everybody.
Okay.
It has to be what's considered to be the critical mass of the Jewish people.
That didn't even happen when the Jews returned to Eretz Yisrael with the second base of Migdash. It was only a small
number. Right. Right. And that's part of, you know, Ru'uyim Hayu. That's what it says. Klal Yisrael could have had miracles in the days of Ezra. That's Adi Avraham Hashem. They could have had miracles in the days of Ezra like they had in the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Except, right, it was a few. Whatever. Gar Machet, whatever it was. So many, some of the Machlaikas, Amoiroi. In the Gemara, because they didn't go. So whatever it is. But that, to recouple it, to realize that it's not a trinity, excuse the expression.
The final exam will be we all have to fly over Israel. At this class.
But I thought we can't go till Moshe comes. That's the whole concept of Satmar and the whole people. You can't go, there's no government till Moshe comes.
Well, first of all, as you said correctly, that's one concept. The Gemara says in Ksubis, the idea of the Shalosh Shvuos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know, don't try to force the hand of the nations of the world and so on and so forth. You know, you have to wait till the time is ripe. You can't just go yourself. You can't be like the, after the Chet HaMeraglim, what happened? The Jewish people said, oh, you're right, we made a mistake, let's go. Right? And what happened? They were killed. Charma, right? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, sorry, right? It's already disconnected. Now you'll go and I tell you it's time to go. So the Gemara seems to say the same thing ultimately, that Kol Yisrael as a nation can go when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them that it's time to go. The question is, what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you that it's time to go? When the second Beis HaMikdash was built, there was a guy who was the king of the Persians. His name was Cyrus, Koresh. And he came to the Jewish people. He said, anybody who wants can go to Eretz Yisrael. And in 1948, right, after years and years and years of Jews trying to get through with the British mandate, trying to get into Eretz Yisrael, and people saying, sorry, only 20 of you can come, or only 20,000 of you can come this year, or whatever it is, then he said, here, it's your state, and you have a law of return. Any Jew who wants to come from any country in the world can come. The Iraqis sent all the Jews, go to Eretz Yisrael, get out of here, we don't want you anymore. The Egyptians sent all the Jews, get out of here, we don't want you anymore. All the countries over there, all those countries said, go, 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 go. That's not Yom Pakti Eschem. That's not the day when HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls us. It's different than Kairosh. It's far from simple that it's any different than Kairosh. Any different than the days of Koresh, where, you know, why did 40,000 Jews go and everybody else stay in Bavel? He said, ach, Koresh. Koresh, you know, it's a guy, when Mashiach will come, you know what's going to happen? There's going to be a fellow who's going to show up with a flowing white beard and a talus over his head, right? And he's going to blow shofar in the middle of Shachris, right? Or maybe in the middle of the supermarket. I don't know where he's going to do it. He'll stand on the corner of Park Heights and Clark's Lane. Doo! Everybody go, right? And the Eagles will swoop down. We'll quickly put our minivans and our suitcases onto it. Although in Mitzrayim, where it says Hashem took us out on the wings of eagles, He didn't take us out on the wings of eagles. We walked out of Mitzrayim, right? But nevertheless, somehow we think that when the Gula will come, right? That, so they said, Kairosh, a king comes and says, any Jew who wants to go to Eretz Yisrael is welcome to Eretz Yisrael. This is Yom Pakti Eschem. And we missed the boat. We missed the boat. So, you know, it's hard to know. It's hard to know. Hard to know that we didn't miss the boat. You know, famously, the Rameir Simcha has a letter from the Meshech Chachma, wrote a letter in the 1930s where he said that the Gemara in Ksuba says you can't go as a nation, you can't force your way back to Eretz Yisrael. Till HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that applies when you're forcing me back to Israel. But now that there was the San Remo conference, and there was the Balfour Declaration, and you know that they said this is the state of the Jewish people, and you should go there. Now we're not rebelling against anybody. They said it's ours. We can go back. So it doesn't, you know, he's not saying that it's the day of the Geula, right? But he says we're not rebelling by going back. We're not rebelling by going back. It's an interesting thing. I'm consistently troubled with it because there are only a few people who didn't sign on to those declarations. The people who lived in Eretz Yisrael. You know, the Arabs didn't sign on to any of those declarations. It was the powers, you know, the Brits and the United States. And they signed on to it. So shkoyach, we're letting you live in somebody else's house, right? So maybe we were Oyla Kachayma. You know, and that was really the position of the Eidah Haredis, you know, and the Sadman. What are you talking about? The Britons gave you permission. You gotta appease the Arabs to let you in. Don't try to overwhelm the Arabs. Right? They were the leftists, so to speak. They said, you know, you gotta make sure. Don't try to force your way over them. What? They were the leftists. They were the ones. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld was the one who was carrying on negotiations with the Britons, separate from the Zionist agent, from the Jewish agency. You know, carrying his own separate track of negotiations, saying that they shouldn't be as aggressive as they say with the Arabs. Right? We need their permission. We need their thing. He wasn't a leftist on defense, but he was a leftist in diplomacy, right, because of these issues. But certainly, there's a lot of room for this to be Yom Pakti Eschem. The Satmarov, part of his thesis was that it can't be, because if it was engineered by Herzl and by Gordon and by all of these people who were opposed to Torah, then they could not be, this could not be the Pekida. And if it cannot be the real calling, so it must be all something, it's all just a big trap. And we're all being made, you know, this is all a false messianic kind of a thing. Because if it was the real thing, it couldn't be happening through this chevra.
Because some people say that's Mashiach ben Yosef, just preparing the way.
The second Gula is also like the Ezra yelled them to get rid of the ships, because they weren't really studying to
do it. Right, always. Always.
We don't know.
I want to tell you something. We don't know. We should probably be machmir misafek, you know? You know, like, you know, like, I don't know. We should probably be, you know, just in case, we should be machmir. You know, it's like we'd do that if it was, you know, question of hashkachas, huh?
Individually, there's no problem with people going. If you're going as a
for leader. Sure, for sure, it's not a problem of people going individually.
Matter of taking control.
There's also the theory that the
resting
Jews
control,
rested,
huh?
The tzaddikim were like the base of Mikdash. Tzaddikim are like the base of Mikdash. Tzaddikim in Israel, they're there. We should start thinking twice.
Okay.
Reference to Shabbos shir.
Okay, I don't know. I think it's a big.
It's not so posh. It's just pack up and.
It's not so posh. I want to tell you that it isn't so posh. You know, if you'll come to me tomorrow and you say, I want to discuss with you Aliyat Yisrael, I'm going to ask you, how old are your kids? Right. Why am I here? Why am I here in Chutz Laretz?
Right.
Because I woke up too late.
Right. Okay.
Right. You know, it's true. One by one, practically, we have issues. I'm very nervous about it, though.
Yeah.
Very nervous about it. Very nervous about that thing, you know. It haunts me because when we read the Parsha of the Meraglim, what does Hashem say? In the end, He says, "Oh, you're worried to go there because you said, oh, they're going to destroy your children." So Hashem said, "You don't worry about it. The children that you were worried, they'll be fine. They're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. You're the ones who are going to be stuck here." And that, you know, I think that's like that should be enough for to make anybody take pause. At the same time, I'm as guilty as the next guy. People come to me, I tell people, not now, all the time. But I also, you know, it's not a simple thing. It's a very complex thing.
Yes.
At the same time, you know, number one, we have to be driving ourselves nuts because of it, I think. I don't think, like, this is the kind of thing to say, oh, come on, you know, you have to be here, so already just, like, reconcile with it. You know, come to deal with it. You're not supposed to. A person's supposed to mourn over the Beis Hamikdash every day. And a person should you know, not, you know, there's a mentally unhealthy feeling bad, where you don't understand. I'm supposed to. And then there's a person who grieves over something, and is not able to realize that lamaisa, this is what the situation is right now, and I have to go on, but I still feel bad about it. It's different than a person who's grieving and still just they don't understand, but. I have to, you know, this is the way it is right now. We have to figure out how to grieve healthily, but that we shouldn't grieve over it, and we shouldn't feel bad over it, and we shouldn't instill the love of Eretz Yisrael in our children so that maybe they'll be able to do what we weren't able to do. And I think that's really what our job is. If we can't go ourselves, we have to infect our children with the love of Eretz Yisrael, so they should see us distressed over it, and maybe they'll be able to do it. Maybe they'll be able to do it.
We can go after their school.
We're tired.
Go after their schooling. Maybe we can go.
Maybe.
I don't give up yet.
Right? No, 100%. 100%.
But just out of curiosity, does Gog and Magog, does that war have to happen before we? I mean, don't certain things have to happen before we know we're definitely in
it? It has. To, you know, these things, so to speak, have to happen, but they're so subject to interpretation as to when they happen, whether they happen. Right? The Holocaust wasn't Yetzer Gog and Magog. Maybe it was. Now we don't. The prophecies are general. You know, the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, supposed to be Mitzrayim for 400 years. You know, it could have gone many different ways to interpret those 400 years. The 70 years of Babel had multiple interpretations about what it was. It mixed everybody up. It could have been. You know, in Rishonim it says there could have been different interpretations. There could have been different times and. You know, we could have been Yetzer Gog u'Magog. We could have been Yetzer Gog u'Magog. Maybe we're Yetzer Gog u'Magog on 9/11. What's the shear of Gog u'Magog? I don't know. It doesn't say. There's no Chazon Ish shear of Gog u'Magog. You know, it's hard to know.
Wow.
Isn't it a powerful morale? We say separated it. It can't be separated, yeah.
There's not a mitzvah, we wait for somebody else to tell us, don't do it. I mean, you have reasons not to go, there's reasons not to go, but generally, you know, I just don't understand when people say, I'll wait for Mashiach, I can just sit and wait, and then they're going to do it. This doesn't make sense, logically.
Okay.
Well, isn't there a story about? I mean, there are some people who hold that you should actually mamish have a suitcase or these days a duffel bag made of cordura nylon or something.
I famously added a suitcase. Right.
These days you have to weigh it just to make sure it's not over a certain weight. So
yeah, what is it? Down to 65 pounds.
50.
50 pounds. Oh.
There was a couple.
I paid 25 bucks this week, last week.
Man.
And that's because she had Rachmanis. It was way over. I should have had to pay $100. She said, I'll let you just pay $25.
Huh? Mr. A couple had a Seder, and the wife started crying during the Shana Rabbi Yerushalayim. Her husband said, what are you crying? It's just a song.
Your dad, you lived there for a while.
Had my wife.
Did you do it?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm actually trying to shut up soon about having a baby tomorrow.
Schedule.
Yeah, it's getting a little strange, odd feeling. Unless she could have the child today, but I don't think so. So I was wondering, so the week is pretty open for me other than to be with my wife.
She's not working much. Okay. So your schedule is fluid during the day as well?
What I'll do is I'll schedule in the meeting with you. So I have two main things I want to talk to you about. One is
do you want this to be recorded?